You're listening to Central Time. I'm Veronica Rickert.
And I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up tonight after 7, it's Latino USA. Tonight, a Latino Republican looks at Donald Trump's immigration promises. The ACLU talks about possible legal battles, plus more in the run-up to a Trump presidency. That's tonight after 7 here on the Ideas Network.
First, President-elect Donald Trump is well-known for his business dealings in the United States and around the world. But as he gets closer to being inaugurated as the next president, there have been concerns about potential conflicts of interest between his old job, leading the Trump Organization, and his new job, leading the country.
According to the Washington Post, Trump's real estate, management, and branding empire has business interests in about 18 countries and territories, from India to Saudi Arabia to Bermuda, and his family is expected to be influential as he prepares for office, too. The president-elect named his oldest children, Ivanka, Eric, and Donald Jr., to his transition team.
Terry Sullivan joins us now. He's Associate Professor of Political Science at the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill, also Executive Director of the White House Transition Project, a multi-institutional project preparing both the major presidential candidates, the president-elect, and the outgoing president for the transition. Terry, welcome to Central Time.
Thanks. Happy to be here.
Well, Terry, how big a problem could some of these business and family ties be for Donald Trump when we look at perceived conflicts of interest?
Well, and they're, of course, complicated by the fact that a lot of his business dealings are overseas. We've had other presidents like Lyndon Johnson. I'm from Texas. Lyndon Johnson's family owned a television station, which was regulated by the federal government. And so there are precedents for how to deal with some of these conflicts. He wasn't directly involved in the management of the company, but his wife was the principal stockholder. And so there are, you know, solutions. It's not like we've never faced this kind of problem before. It's not completely unprecedented.
So when you say how to deal with some of this stuff, what is in the toolkit for how to do just that? I don't know if there should be a firewall or if there should just be ways of managing both of them. What do you think?
Well, the principal objective of conflict of interest legislation is to assure the public that the decisions of the office holder are independent of their own personal business gained or losses. And that's a pretty common strategy for dealing with conflict of interest. And so I think it's certainly the case that we've had secretaries of Treasury like Robert Rubin who had enormous holdings of stock and so would be making decisions that would affect the value of those stocks. And so we've had a lot of experience over time dealing with the notion of conflict of interest and its effect on government decision making. So I'm not sure what all of the concerns are out there in the world. I think the biggest concerns have to do with not so much conflict of interest, but whether or not the president-elect's business is pretty much a family business. And in that way, he's kind of like a lot of small businessmen who depend upon their closest relatives, their family, to help run the company. And in that way, I guess he's different from a lot of these major conflict of interest issues like Robert Rubin had as Secretary of Treasury.
But what happens when you've got some of those family members, you know, not just helping run the business, but also installed perhaps in advisory positions or maybe official positions within the White House administration?
Well, so, you know, one question is there information that is available on national affairs that is not widely held, and therefore someone in the White House who especially has a national security clearance, for example, might know, and that would affect business decisions, especially for a business that is like real estate is, you know, dependent on, it's a fixed asset. You can't move it around. It's not like investments in stocks, which you can move in or out of. You can't physically move the asset. And so the that poses a problem. And I think that's the issue that people are most concerned about is what do we do with a president who closest advisors are also family members, but they're closest advisors because they've had a long association running a business together. and that, I've stepped off into depths that I don't really know the depth, what's down there. It's hard for me to say what is the right answer, but it's not like we don't have people who deal with this all the time in government. The Office of Congressional Ethics, the Office of Government Ethics, the OGE, deals with this kind of problem all the time. And we'll eventually have a solution for it.
We're talking with Terry Sullivan right now, Associate Professor of Political Science at the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill, talking about the presidential transition in light of the various possible conflicts of interest issues that could arise for President-elect Donald Trump. And to continue in that same vein of thought, looking at family possibly being involved, there were some eyebrows raised, some concern when Ivanka Trump sat in on a meeting with Prime Minister of Japan and Donald Trump in terms of, security clearance, national issues. Should there be cause for concern there?
Well, I don't know about cause for concern at this point. It would be a very big difference, cause for concern, if Donald Trump was the president rather than the president-elect. We have one president at a time. The decisions made and the promises made by the president-elect to the government of Japan are less important than the same utterances made by the president of the United States. It's uncomfortable that people who not simply didn't have national security clearances but also don't know that much about the economy, and as someone who is a chief advisor to the president might know, who's talking to one of our principal trading partners and one of our chief allies. So, yeah, that's a troubling thing to see, but I think speaks more to the president-elect's inexperience in dealing with these sorts of issues. They also didn't have talking points from the State Department, so that all of this sort of transpired before the president-elect was really up and running in terms of dealing with the federal government and the government that he's going to manage and its relations. And that's not a completely uncommon experience, unfortunately, in transitions. And the thing that happens often in transitions is that people, regardless of whether they're a governor or a senator or a member of the House or a businessman or whatever, it's often the case that they and their staffs make the mistake of thinking that whatever it is they have been doing is something akin to what it's like to be president. The president is really different from everybody else in the world. The job is different, the scope of it, the scrutiny involved in it, the scale of it. These are things that no one is really prepared for. And it's really important in that environment to take, to be cautious rather than presume that you're up to this.
Terry, are there laws in place to limit the overlap between the actions of a president and his or her business dealings?
Sure. There are lots having to do with conflicts of interest. And there are also the ones that have been most mentioned recently have to do with the application of conflict of interest to relatives and whether those relatives are immediate family relatives or connected by marriage relatives. And what kinds of jobs those conflicts of interest regulations are applied to. So, for example, there's nepotism, which is one form of conflict of interest. President Kennedy appointed his brother to be the attorney general, and that was before we had these sorts of complex federal statutes. And that raised eyebrows. Robert Kennedy, was not a long practicing member of the federal judiciary. He wasn't a member of the bar for very long. And so being appointed as the chief legal officer of the government was kind of an unusual thing, but it was what President Kennedy thought was a good way of bringing his brother in as a counselor, given the array of issues that were important at the time. And almost all of those issues were under the purview of the Attorney General, having to do with civil rights legislation in particular. And so he thought that was a good place to put his brother as a counselor. Since then, statutes have prohibited that kind of appointment, mainly because it's part of his immediate family, his brother, and it's part of an important federal agency. So those are some of the most important issues to date. But we have other conflicts of interest. We have a basic theory about conflict of interest, which is that we want people to understand that the things they do as part of the federal government, as office holders, are going to be transparent. The public's going to find out about them. And the idea there is to deter those office holders from making decisions in the past or in the future that would call into question their making the right decision in terms of the public's interest as opposed to a decision driven by their own personal interests. And that basic theory about conflict of interest and how to regulate conflict of interest through transparency is effective when it's applied to office holders who can anticipate making future decisions and being held accountable for those decisions. It's less applicable to a new administration as it comes into office because the decisions that have been made in the past have been made outside of government when one could imagine that you weren't going to be held accountable in a sort of transparent way for those decisions. So the whole notion of deterrence in the executive, especially during a transition and during the beginning of a new administration, the deterrent effect of conflict of interest legislation is kind of moot. And the Office of Government Ethics understands that and has often recommended to Congress changes in our basic ethics legislation. But the Congress has found it hard to allow the executive branch to be governed by different standards than they are themselves as office holders governed by.
Terry Sullivan is with us right now, Associate Professor of Political Science at the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill, talking about the presidential transition in light of various conflicts of interest, potential conflicts of interest issues that could arise for President-elect Donald Trump.
You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you have questions for our guest about the transition, how it works, how ethics guidelines, conflict of interest laws play into these things? Do you have concerns about potential conflicts of interest between Donald Trump's role in business and his role as president? Were they on your mind when you were voting? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or post on the Central Time Facebook page.
We'll continue the conversation in just a bit here on Central Time.
This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Veronica Rickert. And we're picking up our conversation right now with Terry Sullivan, Associate Professor of Political Science and Executive Director of the White House Transition Project, which helps prepare the president-elect and the outgoing president for the upcoming transition. We're talking about that transition time and potential conflicts of interest as President-elect Donald Trump prepares to transition to his job in the White House.
You can join in at 800-642-1234 or post on the Central Time Facebook page. How do you think a president should deal with their outside interests, their non-government interests, business in this case, while in office? What are you looking for as this transition goes on in terms of ethical behavior from the president-elect and the people around him? What questions do you have about how all this works? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234.
And we take our first caller now. We have Frank with us in Burlington. Hi, Frank.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Regrettably, we've only got less than 2 months now before the president-elect will be sworn in, and I mean, I believe that there are ethical concerns. As a citizen, I mean, what can be done if there really are these concerns in such a short amount of time?
Frank, thank you for the call. And Terry, what about that? What would the recourse be? Is it up to Congress?
Well, basically, we have a set of standards, and there's an Office of Government Ethics, and they're responsible for working out a relationship. And I guess working out a relationship in terms of how to deal with these potential conflicts of interest. We've never had, I mean, we've had presidents in the past. For example, I talked about Lyndon Johnson. His family, he had a family-owned television station, and it was essentially the only television station in Central Texas. It was very profitable as a family business. And, of course, television stations are regulated by the federal government through the Federal Communications Commission. And so there was lots of a potential conflict of interest there. The president appoints the commissioners. And so what was done in that situation is that the president entered into a blind trust. There were people appointed, a former judge in Texas, who were responsible for maintaining the financial well-being of the broadcast company, and the president basically didn't know one way or the other how the company was doing. So that there was distance between the decisions the president was responsible for and the benefits that were accrued to the president from his private business. So it's possible to come up with those things, and the Office of Government Ethics does it for thousands of federal employees who have business affairs before they come into the executive branch. So we have a lot of experience with dealing with this, and it's just a thing that has to be worked out. And they're always worked out under these demanding time constraints. So especially at the beginning of administration, there are lots and lots of he's going to be appointing lots of people to be Secretary of Treasury, to be Undersecretary of Treasury, to be government's trade representative. All these people are going to have business backgrounds. They always do, even in Democratic administrations. They always come from business, from Wall Street, and so they have these complex personal financial affairs, and they have to be resolved, and they're always resolved by the Office of Government Ethics within a fixed amount of time.
Well, thank you for that call. Appreciate that. And we go next to Bill joining us in Stoughton. Bill, hi.
Hi there. Someone had told me that once Donald Trump becomes a president, he has to cut all of his personal ties with any of his businesses or whatever. Is that true? Does he have to totally be disconnected from his business, or what's the deal with that?
And maybe what about the issue of a blind trust being part of the picture here, Terry?
Well, he doesn't. If the caller means, does he have to say sell all of his stock in his company or relinquish his ownership of his company? The answer to that is no. He does have to separate his decision making from the benefits that he receives from his corporate activity, and therefore activity that would be affected by his decision making. That's the principal issue here under conflict of interest, is to guarantee to the public that the decisions he makes are made in the public's interest, not in his own interest. We don't elect these guys to manage what Idi Amin called a kleptocracy, the object of which was to steal as much money from the people as you can while in government. That's not the objective of the American government. It's not what the people are expecting from their leaders. And so we have complex regulations that help assure that the decision-making made by the president and his staff are independent of their personal interests. Now, they still have personal policy preferences. They still have personal ideals. They still have personal ideas about how the economy works, even if those ideas are often not accurate. So they're still going to be guided by their own ideas about how things work. We're not asking them to give up their intuitions. We're not asking them to give up their ideals. And so eventually, all we're really asking is that there's some firewall between their own personal interests, their own personal direct interests in the decisions they make and the decisions they make.
And Terry, I think we're going to leave it there. Thank you so much for joining us. Appreciate your time today.
Well, I'm happy to do it. Wisconsin Public Radio has asked us to come on after every one of these transitions, so we're practically kissing cousins.
We're continuing the tradition. Terry Sullivan with us there, Associate Professor of Political Science at the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. He's also the executive director of the White House Transition Project. It's a project preparing both major presidential candidates, the president-elect and the outgoing president, for the transition, the upcoming transition. Join us there talking about that transition and also potential conflicts of interest issues arising around president-elect Donald Trump. I'm Veronica Rickert.
And I'm Rob Ferrer. This is Central Time on the Ideas Network.